This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. Welcome to the Total Sports Recall Podcast. I'm your host, Harv Aronson, and in this episode, I'll be taking a look at some of the more well-known jinxes from the history of sports, as well as some superstitions former athletes had regarding their respective sport. When you think of jinxes in sports, one that often comes to mind immediately is the curse of the Bambino. Obviously, we're talking about the legendary Babe Ruth, one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Ruth got his professional start playing for the Boston Red Sox. There, he became a star pitcher in the American League, but also became a feared hitter. In 1919, after signing a new contract with the Red Sox to pay him $27,000 for 3 years, Boston owner Harry Frazee sold the contract and the rights to Ruth as a player to the New York Yankees.
December 26, 1919 changed baseball forever. In a stunning deal, Red Sox owner Harry Frazee sold his star player, Babe Ruth, to the Yankees. What followed wasn't just a trade. It was the dawn of sport's most infamous curse. Frazee, drowning in debt, saw Ruth's larger-than-life presence as both a blessing and a burden. The Babe had shattered home run records but was just as famous for his antics off the field. Frazee needed cash, and the Yankees delivered, paying $100,000, plus a mortgage on Fenway Park. Yet, Boston fans were divided. While some lamented losing the Sultan of SWAT, others felt his wild behavior spelled trouble for New York. But history tells the story. Ruth led the Yankees to dynasty status, while the Red Sox endured an 86-year championship drought. The curse of the Bambino was born, proving that some trades echo through time.
For the next 105 years, the Red Sox failed to win another World Series after winning five from 1901 to 1918. Boston did make the World Series in those 105 years, that coming in 1946, where they lost to the St. Louis Cardinals, who they lost to again in 1967. In 1975, Boston lost to the Big Red Machine, the Cincinnati Reds, in what might be the greatest World Series ever played, featured by a historic game-winning home run off the bat of Carlton Fisk in Game 6 of the series. There was another famous loss in the World Series to the New York Mets in 1986, when Bill Buckner allowed a ground ball to roll through his legs at first base, handing the Mets a Game 6 victory. And then winning it all in Game 7. Many will blame the curse of the Bambino on all these losses. Once divisional play began in Major League Baseball in 1969, the Red Sox did make the playoffs six times without reaching the World Series, but finally broke the ice and the curse when they won the title in 2004. Up until last season, Boston has won the World Series three more times, obviously putting a nail in the coffin of the curse of the Bambino. Sticking to baseball, the Chicago Cubs have been dealt a double whammy. The most famous curse, or jinx if you will call it, is the curse of the Billy Goat. Poor Cubs fans may have gotten the most empathy from baseball fans over the years because of their failures to win a championship, while they are some of the most dedicated and loyal fans in all of professional baseball. The year was 1945, and there was a tavern in Chicago named the Billy Goat Tavern, owned by one William Cianius. Cianius had a pet Billy Goat and brought him to Cubs games. Chicago had reached the 1945 World Series, and with its infamous Billy Goat, he was in attendance. As the goat was a nuisance to other fans, Cianius was told to leave the stadium with his pet goat. The pet's name was Murphy, and reportedly on his way out of the stadium, Cianius is quoted as saying, "Them Cubs, they ain't gonna win no more." The Cubs lost that 1945 World Series and failed to return to the World Series for the next 70 years, when they finally won it all in 2016. But as for just winning a series, their last baseball championship was in 1908, prior to 1916, so it was actually 108 years for the Cubs fan base waiting on a world title, even though from 1908 to 1945, that had nothing to do with the Billy Goat curse. The Cubs would make the World Series seven more times between 1908 until they made the postseason again in 1984. Another seven trips to the playoffs before that 2016 title run. The other Chicago curse came as the result of one foul ball touched by a fan in the 2003 divisional playoffs when Chicago was vying for another World Series appearance and playing the Florida Marlins. The Cubs had built a 3-2 advantage and a 3-0 lead in the sixth game of the series when on a foul ball off the bat of Florida's Luis Castillo was heading into left field foul territory. There, the Cubs' Moises Alou attempted to make the catch, but fan Steve Bartman reached out to grab the ball and interfere with Alou.
Again in the air, down the left field line, Alou reaching into the stands and couldn't get it, and he's riddled with a fan.
Close to fan interference right there. The umpire's all over it. The umpire right down there, Mike Everett's on the play. If Alou has to reach into the stands, it's fair game for the fans to catch the ball. If the fan reaches out over the field, then it can be ruled fan interference. That is very, very close.
Which made his attempt to catch the ball a failure. This led to a series of errors in that same inning. Castillo had another swing, but Chicago pitcher Mark Pryor threw a wild pitch, and Juan Pierre advanced to third base. A hit followed, and Pierre scored. Then shortstop Alex Gonzalez made an error, which should have been an easy double play. That opened the floodgates, and the Marlins scored 8 unanswered runs and won the game 8-3. Florida would win Game 7 and the series, sending him to the World Series. Steve Bartman, however, received death threats. No fan should endure that, as he was just doing what any fan might do on a foul ball and grab himself a souvenir. Aside from that, he should not be responsible for Pryor's wild pitch or Gonzalez's gaffe in the infield that would have stopped the boatload of runs Florida ended up scoring. There are jinxes in pro football as well. Perhaps the most famous one would be that called the Bobby Lane Jinx. Lane is a Hall of Fame quarterback, spending 9 of his 15 years in pro football with the Detroit Lions. In 1958, the Lions made the decision to send Lane to the Pittsburgh Steelers, a perennial losing team at that time. Lane was actually drafted by Pittsburgh, but refused to go there because of their losing ways. So, the Steelers traded him to the Chicago Bears. He would be traded twice more, first to the New York Bulldogs, then to the Lions. The 1958 season began with Lane at quarterback for Detroit, but just 2 games in, the Steelers' head coach at the time, Buddy Parker, worked a trade with the Lions, bringing Lane to the Steel City. In exchange, Detroit received quarterback Orr Morrell, a 1959 draft pick of Pittsburgh's and a second pick from the Steelers in 1960. So angered by the trade, it is reported, but was never confirmed, that Lane told a reporter that the Lions would not win for the next 50 years.
He left town drunk and angry and swore his team would never win again. In 1958, the Detroit Lions traded away their star quarterback, Bobby Lane. Furious, Lane supposedly cursed the franchise, saying they wouldn't win for 50 years. From that day forward, the Lions fell into decades of misery. They became one of the NFL's worst teams, suffering humiliating losses and playoff heartbreak. The curse of Bobby Lane became part of NFL folklore, and even after the 50 years passed, the Lions are still searching for redemption.
So for the next 50 years following the trade, Detroit had the worst winning percentage of all 12 teams in the NFL at the time. They remain just one of four teams that have never reached the Super Bowl. Those other three are Detroit, Cleveland, Jacksonville, and Houston. Those four teams have never made a Super Bowl. Interestingly enough, in the 2005 season, the Steelers won their fifth Super Bowl title, and it was in Detroit. 50 years after the supposed curse call by Lane, Pittsburgh won yet another Super Bowl trophy. This while the Lions had yet to win one. In those 50 years, the Detroit Lions had 28 losing seasons, including the final year of that 50-year span when the team failed to win a single game and finished 0-16. In Bobby Lane's 8 seasons with Detroit, the Lions won 3 league titles and played in a fourth where they lost. In the 67 years since Bobby Lane was traded to the Steelers, the Detroit Lions have made the playoffs just 14 times, or just 20% of those years where they were in the postseason. Of those 14 seasons where they were in the mix, just twice did they make it as far as the NFC Championship game, and all other losses were in the divisional or wild card rounds. Bobby Lane obviously got the last laugh. Tragically, he died at the young age of 59 in 1986 from a heart attack. As we stay in the sport of football, the NFL Madden is one of the most popular video games in the world, but it has its own curse as well. Called the Madden Curse, it deals with NFL players appearing on the cover each year of the new version when it comes out. Since the year 2000, one-third of the players appearing on the cover have resulted in some sort of setback or an injury. So you want some examples? Michael Vick was on the cover in 2004, and in the preseason he broke his leg and subsequently missed 11 games of the regular season. Sean Alexander, a running back, graced the cover in 2007, and following that, he broke his foot, hampering his abilities. Peyton Hillis was the man on the cover in 2012, and the ensuing season went through multiple injuries, illnesses, and participated in a contract dispute. Even the great Rob Gronkowski fell victim to the curse when in 2017 he was chosen for the cover, ended up with an injury that ended his season prematurely. Still playing today is Christian McCaffrey, who was the chosen cover just 2 years ago, but that season was limited to just 4 games because of injuries. How about 2001, the Tennessee Titans' Eddie George, a great running back, was on the cover. You would think his 1,500 yards rushing that season was a success story, but rather he fumbled the ball more times than he ever did before, including a costly turnover in the playoffs when the Titans were eliminated. Following this season, his per carry average never went over 3.4 yards per carry again. The following year, it was Vikings quarterback Dante Culpepper as the chosen one, and that season he missed 6 games to injuries, fumbled 16 times, tossed 13 interceptions, and in his 11 starts, he was 4-7. There are other great players suffering from the curse. Take Marshall Faulk, a Hall of Famer. On the cover in 2003, he missed close to 6 starts and failed to rush for over 1,000 yards after putting up 5 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, including 3 straight 1,300-yard seasons. In Philadelphia, Donovan McNabb had led the Eagles to the Super Bowl 39, and he was featured on the Madden cover in 2006. The result? He got into it with Terrell Owens, missed almost half of a 6-10 season, and over the next 2 years, missed 8 more games. Moving to 2009, EA Sports, the maker of the game, wanted to honor Brett Favre for his Packers career, so he was on the cover. Favre had opted to play for the Jets instead of staying in Green Bay, and he went out that season and threw 22 interceptions, hurt his shoulder, and after one season in New York, moved on to the Minnesota Vikings. As a Pittsburgh Steelers fan right here, the Madden curse struck one of our players as well. It was Hall of Famer Troy Polamalu that was the victim of the curse when he shared the cover with Larry Fitzgerald. The year was 2010. While Fitzgerald suffered no consequences from the jinx, Polamalu ended up with an MCL injury, causing him to be limited to just 11 games, and his season total for tackles was a career-low 20.
Another Steelers player ended up with a more bizarre and career-ending fate after having his image on the cover of Madden. Antonio Brown was on his way to a Hall of Fame career when EA Sports decided to make Brown the cover image for 2019. That season, he became a locker room cancer, and at season's end, he was traded to the Raiders. Since that time, he's been on three different teams, playing in just 16 more games. He also found himself in several crime-related circumstances and is currently waiting trial for attempted murder. I have one more football jinx to mention before I get into some superstitions of some very well-known athletes. In 1925, the NFL title game brought together the Pottsville Maroons facing the Chicago Cardinals. The Maroons ended their existence a long time ago, but to this day, the Cardinals are still playing after moving from Chicago to St. Louis to their current home in Arizona. In that game, the Maroons defeated the Chicago Cardinals and then proceeded to play one more game, albeit an exhibition, and it took place in Philadelphia. The then-Commissioner Joseph Carr informed Pottsville ownership that they violated league regulations, and the Maroons were stripped of their league championship, and it was handed over to the championship game runners-up, the Chicago Cardinals. Naturally, Pottsville fans were up in arms and the decision and reportedly placed a curse on the Cardinals, indicating the curse would last as long as the ruling about the title was in place and not to be lifted until it was reversed. That Joseph Carr decision has never been reversed, but the Cardinals did win the league title in 1947 and then made the championship game a season later only to lose. Therefore, the now Arizona and formerly St. Louis and Chicago Cardinals have not won a championship in 78 years. The Cardinals did come close in 2009 when they lost Super Bowl 43 to the Steelers, but that has been the only title game they have played in since 1925. When it comes to good luck charms, back in the 1970s, the Pittsburgh Terrible Towel was created by famous sportscaster Myron Cope. It's still used today in mass, and it represents good luck to Steelers fans and an encouragement for the team to play better.
Steelers were going into the 1975 playoffs, defending Super Bowl champs. I was ordered by my bosses to come up with a gimmick that will more intensely involve the Steeler fans. So, I came up with a terrible towel, and I went on the air on TV and radio. They had 2 weeks, you know, for me to get this done, throwing towels around and saying to the fans, bring a yellow, gold, or black towel to the game, will you? If you don't have one, buy one. You don't want to buy one, dye one. You know, just any face towel or something like that. And I had no idea what would happen. I show up the first game. My goodness, there's not a towel to be seen in the whole joint, and pals are dropping by my radio booth, old pal, and needling me. You're a loser again, Cope. So, what do you know? The team comes and peers in a tunnel for the introductions. From nowhere come like 30,000 towels, yellow, black, gold towels. Were they sitting on them, or were they hanging them in their coats? I have no idea. And then the next year, it was put on there, the terrible towel, you know. But it was just a plain old towel. But that first game, a minimum of 3 miracles did he deliver. And I had said when I introduced him and threw towels at the anchor man and everything on the 11 o'clock news, I had said, the terrible towel is poised to strike. Boy, did he strike.
Back then, almost as famous Pittsburgh sportscaster Bob Prince made babushkas and the green weenie pickle pin famous as a method of bringing good luck. But there are individual athletes that have their own method of bringing themselves good luck and avoiding anything that will affect them negatively with some quirky and sometimes strange superstitions. I'll provide you with a few. Here's something you may never have known about a man who may be regarded as the greatest professional basketball player in history. Michael Jordan. Did you know that for every game he played with the Chicago Bulls, Jordan was wearing his alma mater shorts under his uniform? That would be the University of North Carolina. After leading the Tar Heels to the NCAA championship round in 1982, he owed some credit to his UNC shorts, believing they brought him good luck. Once in the NBA, to avoid the shorts being seen, Jordan sported a longer set of Bulls shorts to cover his college ones. A well-known superstition once existed in professional tennis, put to use by the great Jean Borg. Jean Borg had the nickname Iceman. He was called that because he was highly confident when playing an opponent. When it came to playing at Wimbledon, Borg always grew a beard, always wore the same feel of shirt as a superstition because he believed it brought him good luck. With his superstition he put to use, Borg went on to win 5 straight Wimbledon titles beginning in 1976. Combat athletes are said to have superstitions before fights, but this one tops them all. Former UFC light heavyweight champion Lyoto Machida has not just a pre-fight ritual, but an everyday ritual of drinking his own urine. And you heard that right. Instead of going in a toilet, this wacko puts it in a cup, then drinks it.
The reason why is because it actually is a health reason. And what happens is when you eat, and all the food that you eat and you digest, not all of it comes out. But when you drink your urine in the morning, it helps flush your system out. So it basically cleans your system every day when you drink your urine.
When I first heard of this, I was in disbelief. Then I saw he and his father actually performing the act on television. Disgusting. I don't know how they do it, or stomach it for that matter, but according to the fighter, by doing this, he believes your own urine is a natural medicine that cleanses the body. Yeah, right. Not as gross as that is of Wayne Gretzky, one of hockey's best players. He had a belief of not having his hair cut before any game. One time in his career, he did get some locks trimmed and his team lost. The rest is history. Back in baseball, Wade Boggs, an outstanding player who spent 18 years in Major League Baseball, had a superstition of eating chicken before a game. It began in his rookie season of 1982, and after feasting on some chicken, he went out and had a solid game. So, he turned to chicken before taking the field. Reportedly, his wife has accumulated over 50 different recipes for cooking chicken. Also in baseball, Larry Walker, another diamond great, had a fetish and belief in one single number, the number 3. His alarm clock would always be set for 33 minutes past the hour. His batting practice came in groups of 3 swings. He got married on November 3rd at 3:33 p.m. While playing for the Montreal Expos, he purchased 33 tickets for underprivileged children, all in section 333. When renegotiating a contract 1 year, his request was for a deal worth $3,333,333.33. You may call this other baseball oddity a superstition, but former Detroit Tigers pitcher Mark Fitterich, before throwing to his catcher, would be seen cleaning the pitching mound and then creating small mounds on the mound. He could also be talking to the baseball. The bird was his nickname. There are 2 final superstitions worth mentioning. First, we have former Chicago Bears great linebacker Brian Urlacher, who would spend his pregame eating chocolate chip cookies. Why? Apparently just because, or is it because he thought this would help him have a great game? In golf, aside from Jack Nicklaus, there may have never been a greater player than Tiger Woods. Some will remember the tiny young Woods appearing on the Mike Douglas talk show with his father many moons ago, showing off his early golf skills.
So right now, I'd like you to meet Tiger Woods and his father, Earl Woods. Earl, how old is how old are you, Tiger?
2.
At that age, his mother told him the color red was his power color. Now, you may recall seeing Woods wearing a red polo shirt on the final day of tournaments throughout the history of his career. It's always only on the final day of a tournament. There are most likely more jinxes I did not mention and tons of superstitions by athletes everywhere, but in this episode, it's my hope that I provided a little insight into these 2 topics. On my next episode in mid-February, the topic will be two-way athletes, men and women, who either played several positions in their respective sports or players that took the fields in 2 different sports. With that said, this is your host, Harv Aronson. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I'm always open to comments and suggestions, which can be conveyed to me using the show's email address, which is totalsportsrecall@gmail.com. And so until the next episode, be safe, take care of yourselves, and the show will return in a few weeks.
Hi, this is Joe Ziemba.
and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers, and all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of two free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.